I've called this lesson Five Cups, Five Questions, and Five Sons, because I'd like to learn with you what are the normative approaches to the Seder, and what I believe is really standing behind the Seder in terms of its main principles. We're all used to the Seder Pesach. It's probably the single most observed holiday and the most observed custom in Am Yisrael. Here in the land of Israel, studies have demonstrated that close to 90% of the Jewish population in the land of Israel sit down to a Seder on Pesach evening. And we all know that the Seder is organized around groups of four. There are four cups of wine. There are four questions that open up the Magid. There are four sons that the Seder is going to discuss. And there are four psukim, four verses around which the Magid is constructed. And when we take a look at these sets of four, we start to discover that they are only apparently four, that really in each and every one there are five and not four. Let's take a look at each one of these sets of four and see what is the fifth that stands behind them. The four cups of wine, which according to the Mishnah in Arvei Pesachim, the 10th chapter of Mishnah Pesachim, the four cups are the backbone of the Seder. Over the first cup, one says Kiddush. Over the second cup, one deals with the Magid, the telling of the Pesach story, and the beginning of the Hallel. Over the third cup, one says Birkat HaMazon, after the meal. And over the fourth, one finishes the Hallel and says Birkat HaShir. And these four cups, as we know, were derived for many, many symbolisms, but the most commonly known is that of the four languages of redemption brought down at the beginning of Parshat Va'era in Shemot. Vehotzeti, Vehitzalti, Velekachti. And we have these four languages of redemption bring us to Har Sinai, where we receive the Torah. Hotzeti, Tzalti, Ga'alti, Velekachti. And these four languages of redemption give rise to the four cups that we drink on Seder night. However, if we look into the Gemara in Masechet Pesachim, we see that there was a concept not of four cups, but of five cups. If one takes a look, for instance, in Masechet Pesachim, Andaf Kuf Yud Ched Amud Aleph, one reads the following Baraita. Kos Revi'i Gomer Alav Et Ha'alel, on the fourth cup, one finishes the recitation of the Hallel that one began before the meal. Chamishi, and on the fifth cup, Omer Alav Hallel Agadol, Divrei Rabbi Tarfon. And on the fifth cup, one says the great Hallel, that is, the Hallel that begins with Hodu Lashem Kitov Kili Olam Chasto. And these are the words of Rabbi Tarfon. And others say that one doesn't say the Hallel Agadol on the fifth cup, but rather Hashem Ru'i Lo Echsar, one of the Tehillim. Now, in the Gemarot that we have today, it doesn't have this girsa. It doesn't have this reading. It says, Kos Revi'i Gomer Alav Et Ha'alel, Ve'omer Alav Birkat Hashir. And the entire concept of the fifth cup has been expunged from the text. However, in almost all the manuscripts, and in many of the Rishonim, it's brought down that in this Braita, a fifth cup was mentioned. Now, many people are familiar with the concept of a fifth cup, or the remnant of it, in the Kos of Eliyahu, which sits on the table. The Kos of Eliyahu is not a cup that Eliyahu drinks. This is not Santa Claus. But rather, it's a cup that we will drink when Eliyahu comes. Now, why is that connected to Eliyahu? Because we have a tradition in rabbinic literature that when Eliyahu comes, all doubts and questions in rabbinic law will be resolved. And since there was a question whether or not the fifth cup is obligatory or permissible or not to be done at all, then it was left to be something that the Eliyahu would resolve. And so we put a fifth cup on the table and fill it with wine, as this is the fifth cup that we would drink if we knew how to resolve the issue in halakha. And Eliyahu would resolve it, and that's the fifth cup. But there are many Jews that have an actual custom of drinking a fifth cup. And as a matter of fact, when one reads in the Rishonim, one reads about this very, very prevalently. For instance, I read to you from the words of the Rambam. The Rambam says in Hilchot Chametz B'Matzah, in Perek Chet, Halakha Yud, he says as follows.
Do you hear me now? My friends, do you hear me now? Oh, good. Okay. So that's fine. We're back on track. Good. Well, let me review what I said over the last 2 minutes. I quoted from the Rambam and from Abenu Asher and from the Reef, who all bring down the tradition that one should drink a fifth cup of wine. Most of them bring it down as something voluntary, not obligatory like the first 4 cups. But there are Rishonim who bring it down as an obligation, that the fifth cup is kovah. And today, of course, we only observe it as a memory, with the fifth cup being the cup of Eliyahu. Now, where does this fifth cup, what does it represent? We know that the 4 cups represent the 4 languages of redemption. What does the fifth cup represent? And we're going to leave that for just a moment to study the other components of 4 in the Seder, and then we're going to come back and see how they all connect as we move along. The next set of 4 that we all talk about are the 4 questions. The very beginning of the Magid, and if you have Haggadot in front of you, you can have to open up those 4 questions, and you'll see that the 4 questions relate to 4 of the main characteristics of the Seder, distinguishing characteristics, we might say. And what are they? The first is that we eat only matzah, and not chametz and matzah. That makes that night different from all other nights. We also eat maror, specifically, and not other yirakot, not other vegetables. The third question being the question of the dipping of our vegetables twice, and usually we only would dip once or not even once. That's also a question of version in the Haggadah. And then the 4th question is the question of leaning. Why do we lean during the Seder? But as many of you probably know, if you look into the Mishnah in Masechet Tzachim in the 10th chapter, and you look there for the source of the 4 questions, you find it in Perek Yud, Mishnah Dalet. The Mishnah says as follows: Mazgulo Kosheni, the Kan Haben Sho Elaviv. You pour the 2nd cup, and here the child will ask his father questions. And if the child doesn't know what to ask, then the father will teach him what to ask. And then the Mishnah brings down the 4 questions that the child is supposed to ask, apparently as examples of questions. Not as the only questions the child should ask, but the 4 questions that spring to one's mind when celebrating the Seder. And what are they? The first question, of course, is the eating of matzah as opposed to chametz and matzah, the same as we have today. The 2nd question is that on all other nights we eat sha'ar yirakot, but on this night we eat maror, okay, which is the same as we have today. The 3rd question, however, is different. That on all other nights we eat roasted meat, or boiled meat or cooked meat, but halayla hazeh kulo tavim. But on this night, all the meat we're eating is roasted over an open fire. Why? This question, of course, doesn't exist today because we don't have Korban Pesach today. We don't have the Pesach offering. Until we have the Pesach offering, there's nothing to ask about because no child sees roasted meat on the table. There was a custom in the days after the destruction of the Beit Mikdash, in the time of Yavne, to eat what was called Gidi Mikulat, that is to eat a roasted a kid, a baby goat, even though it wasn't the Korban Pesach, as a zecher, as a remembrance of the Korban. But that fell out of use, and today, as a matter of fact, some people even hold that there's a prohibition to eat roasted meat on Seder night, so as not to try and imitate what was done in the Beit Mikdash. But in any event, this third question has been eliminated. And the fourth question, as mentioned in the Mishnah, is the issue of the dipping of one's vegetables in a salt water or vinaigrette solution. But the question of leaning as opposed to sitting is not mentioned in the Mishnah at all. That was brought in order to maintain the structure of four questions when the question about the meat disappeared. So we have here really not four questions. We have the four in our Haggadah today, but there's really a fifth question. There's a fifth question that lies behind the other four that deals with the Korban Pesach. So now we have two fifth items. We have the fifth cup, which is usually said, for those that say it, I drink the fifth cup at home, and we say it after you finish the Halel HaMitzri in your Haggadot, and then you start the Halel HaGadol, Hodu L'Hashem Kitov Kidolam Hato, we pour the fifth cup. And there's different opinions whether or not you say a bracha on the fifth cup. You don't say a bracha on the fifth cup. But in any event, there is a fifth cup, not four cups. And there's not now four questions. There were five questions. Now, the other, there were two other sets of four in our Seder. There are the four sons. And the four sons, the four types of children, the Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, and the Eino Yodea Lish'ol, the wise, the wicked or the contrary son, the simple one, and the one who doesn't know how to ask the question, these are all derived, of course, from four psukim in the Torah, three in Parshat Bo, in Sefer Shemot, and one in Sefer Dvarim, much later on, in the fifth book of the Torah, that's found in Parshat Be'etchanan. And if we take a look at these four passages from the Torah, we can see that they talk clearly about communication to children. But what do they talk about? What exactly is the communication? So in Shmot Perek Yudet, we have in Pasuk Kavav, we have the Hayat Yomru Alechem Benechem Maha Avodazo Lechem. When your children look at what you're doing, and you're observing this service, and you say, and they say, what is this to you? Then you, the Amartan, and you will say to them, Zevach Pesach L'Hashem. This is a sacrifice of a Passover offering to Hashem, who passed over our houses, etc., etc. In other words, it's a specific question. What is this you're doing, sacrificing this goat at this time? And you're going to answer him why you're sacrificing this goat, because it's not a usual sacrifice. It's one that's unusual. And so you have to give him an explanation. If you look in Shmot Perek Yudgimel, Pasuk Chet, we have, Yidadet alevincha vayom hahu lemor, and if you look at the context there, it's dealing with the eating of matzah. That matzah must be eaten for 7 days, and there can be no chametz seen or owned by it. And this tells us that, again, this is a question which is pointed at a specific observance, at the observance of matzah. The first son is asking about the Korban Pesach. The second son is asking about matzah. In Shmuel Perek Gimel Pasuk Yedalid, we have as follows: the Hayaki Shalcha Bincha Machar Lemor Mazot, what we call today the Tam, the simple son, the Amarta Elav, the Chozek Yad Hotziyanu Hashem Mitzrayim Yedei Ravadim. And what is the son talking about there? He's not talking about the Seder at all. He's not talking about Korban Pesach. He's not talking about Matzah. He's talking about the custom of Pidyon Zechor, of the redemption of the firstborn, either of animals or of one son. Then when your children ask you, what are you doing? Why do you have to redeem me? From who do you have to redeem me? Then you'll answer, because this is what happened when God took us out of Egypt, that he killed the firstborn of the Egyptians and ours he saved. And therefore I do this. And it has nothing whatsoever to do with the fate of this question. If one looks at the fourth question, which is found in the Devarim Perek Vav, Pasukah, we have Ki Yishalcha Bincha Machar Lemor Ma Ha'edot VeHachukim VeHamishpatim Asher Tziva Hashem Eloheinu Etchem. And when Hashem asks you, when your child will ask you, what are all of the statutes and principles and ordinances that our God has commanded you, then you'll answer him, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and Hashem took us out of there, V'yatzasakah, and he did wonders and miracles, etc., and he took us out of there, and he commanded us to do all these things. But again, the question of the wise, of what we call today the wise son, is a question about specific behavioral observances. He looks at what his parents are doing, and he says, why are you doing these things? And the parent answers why those observances are being done. All four of these children are asking questions about things, specific observances that they see. Now, if you look carefully at the language of the Haggadah, when it starts with the four children, it says, "Keneged arba'a banim divra Torah," that the Torah spoke about four different kinds of children. But the word keneged doesn't only mean about. Keneged can also mean the Torah spoke, as it were, in opposition to, or against, or in apposition to the four sons. In other words, you have the four children, the Torah spoke about them, but the Torah spoke about them, as it were, with a certain reticence, that maybe there's something else beyond what these four sons are. And if one looks carefully in the Torah, one sees that in Parashat Bo, in Sefer Shemot, before the mentioning of the three out of the four children, we have another mentioning of talking to children that the first one of the four of the four sons is mentioned in Shemot Perek Yudet. But in Shemot Perek Yud, we have the following. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem says to Moshe, Go el Paro, go into Pharaoh, ki ani hikvadeti et libo vet lev avadav, laman shiti ototai ele bikirbon. Because I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants in order to place my wonders in his midst. And then says Pasuk Bet in Perek Yud, Ulaman tisaper beozne bincha uven bincha et asher hitalalti b'mitzrayim ve'et ototai asher samtivam v'yedatem ki ani Hashem. And the reason why I'm doing all of this is so that you will tell your children and your grandchildren the way that I literally trampled, I abused, I treated with utter zilzul, with diffidence, Mitzrayim. I just treated them horribly. And all of the wonders that I did there, that I did in the Egyptians, and you will know that I am Hashem. Here, we do not have a response to a specific observance where the parent is responding to a question of the child. The parent is initiating the communication, and God is telling the parents, you must tell your children and your grandchildren the way I treated Egypt and the wonders that I did there so that they will know that I am God. In other words, that education is supposed to begin long before the child asks questions. We don't believe only in the constructivist approach, that is, the child discovers on his own. Not at all. It's the job of the educator and the parent to actively and purposefully guide the development of a child's beliefs and attitudes and principles and commitments and values. But that's what education is. And therefore, what the Torah is saying is, yes, there are overarching principles that you're supposed to teach. Number one, that the redemption of Israel from Egypt was accompanied by a tremendous destruction of the Egyptians who were trying to oppress the Jewish people, and the knowledge that Hashem is God, that there is only one God, and therefore everything that flows from him. Our identity as a nation flows from him. Our redemption from Egypt flows from him. The observances that we're doing And when the Torah, when the Haggadah says "Keneged arba anim divrat Torah," if education of children only begins when children start to ask questions, then it's really then Torah divrat keneged. The Torah speaks against that. The Torah is not interested in a family environment where parents do not educate their children until the child picks up his head and says, "Hey, why are you eating that?" Because then it's already too late. Then the child has already gone too far. Even the Chacham, when the Chacham asks, "What are the Edot and the Chukim and the Mishpatim asher tziva Hashem Elokeinu etchem?" he's already excluded himself to a certain extent because the parents have not gone far enough in making it part of the child's life. There's something wrong with the overall vista in the child's life if the child can only respond to what he sees around him happening on a point-by-point basis, and he's not in being imbued with an overall approach to life and a faith about the uniqueness of the Jewish people and its role in the world. And so, although we talk about four sons, these four sons are the ones that the Torah is not so happy with. The one the Torah wants is a child who doesn't even have to ask these questions. You've heard people say, especially they say it in Chabad, that there is a fifth child, a child who's not even there at the Seder. Well, okay, that might be fine for Hebrew purposes. But there's another fifth son. That's the fifth son who's at the Seder, but he doesn't have to ask these questions because he already knows that the whole reason why we're doing the Seder is because of much greater principles, because of the principles of our faith in God and our knowledge of what happened to Egypt when they opposed Hashem. And when a child is so imbued with the values of what Torah is, then these kinds of point-by-point questions become matter of fact. They're not an issue that you have to relate to specifically because they just flow in the existence around the child. It's the gestalt of the child's life. So we don't have four cups of wine, we have five. We don't have four questions, we have five questions. And we don't have four sons, we have five, because we have the child who has the overarching awareness that makes these questions obvious. But there's one more set of four. There are four psukim. The four psukim, the four verses around which the Magid is based. And if you will open up your Haggadot to the Magid, to where the Magid begins with Seul Lamad, come and let us learn about the story of the Exodus. And I discussed the Magid in one of my previous Shiurim about Pesach on the Torah in Moshe network. You can find it in the MP3 library of Torah in Moshe about using the Seder as a pedagogical tool. I'm not going to go into that here, but I do want to point out that the four sukkim that we quote are taken from Parashat Ki Tavo in the Torah, which is Perek Kaf Vav of Sefer Dvarim, and they're brought, of course, from the Vidui Bikurim, from the Mikra Bikurim, what a person has to read when he brings the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, and the sukkim are brought there in order. And you're supposed to say Arami Ovedavi. We put down the basket of first fruits, and you say Arami Ovedavi, Vayered Mitzrayma, and you tell the whole story, how my father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down to Egypt, and the whole family went down there, and they were enslaved, and he called out to God, and he saved us, and etc., etc. And Vayotienu, Hashem in Mitzrayim, Biyad Chadaka, Uvizuo Nitzuya, Uvimura Gadol, Uviotodu Vimofin, and God saved us with wonders and miracles and outstretched arm and all of these things. However, it's very interesting that if you look in the Mishnah, in the 10th parak of Psachim, parak Arbei Psachim, when it talks about this Midrash, it doesn't say four Psachim. It says that after the child asks the four questions, we're told, and this is at the end of Mishnah Dalet, Ulefi da'ato shel ben aviv malamdo, according to the knowledge of the child, his father should instruct him. Matil bignut umisayim b'shvach. He should begin with the negative and proceed to the positive. V'doresh me'arami oved avi, and he should interpret the verses that begin with arami oved avi, the beginning of the Mikra Bikurim that a person says, as brought down there in Devarim Perakavav. And then how does the Mishnah end? Ad she'igmor kol ha'parasha kula, until he should finish all of that parsha. All of the parsha of the Mikra Bikurim. That's a rather strange language. Ad shigmor kol haparasha kula. And what makes it unusual is that if you take a look at Parashat Ki Tavo and Perek Kaf Vav, you'll see that these four psukim are not the end of the parasha. Not at all. There is a fifth pasuk that a person says in the Misrati Purim. And the fifth pasuk is, Vayivienu el ha-makom hazeh, Vayitinlanu et ha-aretz hazot, Eretz zavat chalav udvash. And not only did he take us out of Egypt with wonders and miracles, he brought us to this place, meaning to Eretz Yisrael. And he gave us this land, a land flowing with milk and honey. That is the fifth and final pasuk. And so then, when the person brings the Bikurim, and then he says, and therefore I brought these Bikurim. But the history that he's teaching, that he's reciting as part of his bringing his first fruit, is five psukim, not four. And if you look in the Midrash Halacha on Sefer Dvarim, the Sifri Dvarim, you see that there is a Midrash Halacha in this pasuk. In the same way that we have a Midrash on the first four psukim that's brought down in the Haggadah, we have a Midrash on the fifth pasuk. And what does the Midrash say? Vayivienu el ha-makom hazeh, he brought us to this place, that's the Beit HaMikdash. Vayitinlanu et ha-aretz hazot, and he gave us this land, that's Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. In other words, that the drash of the Magid is not around four psukim at all. It's around five psukim. It's around five psukim. So we have five cuts, not four. Five questions, not four. We have five children, not four. And we have five psukim, not four. And the question is, what does all this mean? And why is it that Chazal, when they constructed the Haggadah, why did they hide the fifth dimension? What was going on that made them put the fifth items in the background? So it's important for us to be able to understand what's going on here, for us to realize who it was really that put the Haggadah together. The Haggadah, virtually all of it, was put together during the time of Yavne. That is, after the destruction of the second Beit Mikdash in the year 70, and the Sanhedrin moved to Yavne, over the next 50, 60 years, the Haggadah, as we know it today, took shape. Virtually all of the Tanaim mentioned in the Haggadah, and the Haggadah is a Tanaitic text, virtually all of the Tanaim mentioned are Tanaim from Yavne. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Tarfon, they're all Yavne Tanaim. And in the time of Yavne, what Am Yisrael was going through was trauma. Trauma over the destruction of the Beit Mikdash, the murder of hundreds of thousands of Jews by the Romans, dispersion of the people to Egypt, to Europe, to the East, and the breaking of the national entity of the Jewish people. It was an extremely traumatic time, painful, corrosive to Jewish national unity, and we know that many, many Chachamim gave their lives, including the Nasi, Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel I, gave his life in the great revolt against Rome. And so when the rabbis sat down in Yavne, they knew that Pesach could no longer be the same. First of all, there was no longer any Korban Pesach. And the children who were born in the Yavne period grew up without any experience of the Beit Mikdash. They never saw a Korban Pesach. So Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, of course, he wanted to maintain the custom, so he cooked the Gedim and Kulat. But he was a minority, and it was clear that it was only a Becher, but the children had never any idea of what a Korban Pesach really looked like. The tremendous panorama and pageantry involved in the offering of Korban Pesach by hundreds of thousands of Jews coming from all over Israel, filling the Azarah, the courtyard of the Beit Mikdash, at the eating of the Korban Pesach in all of Yerushalayim by those who had brought Korbanot. It was an incredibly impressive scene. But children who grew up in Yavne and children who grew up in North America don't even know what this is. We don't know what it is today. We've never seen it. And so the dimensions of Pesach were reduced. Five became four. Because what are three dimensions and what are four and what are five? Three dimensions are, of course, the dimensions in which we live. A person in his own life lives in a three-dimensional world, a world with length, with width, with breadth. People who think a little bit more realize that although they're living now in two dimensions, that their lives are the result of four dimensions, because time, as the fourth dimension, has produced them as part of the never-ending links of the Jewish people. And those who study Jewish law with an open mind, and the Talmud with an open mind, know very well that halakha has evolved over time, and that time is part of the halakhic system. So we now have a question that if the people going through this drama needed this hope for future of promised Israel again, time of third day, gosh, why is it so hidden? Oh, yes, very good question. We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that. So it's the normal person lives in three dimensions. The wiser person lives in four dimensions. He knows that he's connected to that which came before and that which will come after him, and that time is part of his existence, and that his world cannot be described only in terms of the here and now. Those who say we want this now and that now are really quite immature, because they're not aware that time, as time flows, there are processes that take many, many generations, and it's not something that can happen now. And so time is the fourth dimension. But the Jew, my friends, is not supposed to live in three dimensions. The Jew is not even supposed to live only in four dimensions. The Jew is supposed to live in five dimensions, because the fifth dimension is eternity. The fifth dimension is that which goes beyond anything that we can perceive through our six senses, our five and even our six senses. We can't perceive eternity because we're programmed to live within four dimensions. But the Jew is supposed to educate himself that there is a fifth dimension, that you should know that when you were slaves in Egypt, God abused the Egyptians who tried to stand up against this fifth dimension. And you should know that Hashem is God, that the world is only apparent. The physical world is only apparent. What is inherent are the values, the belief, and the knowledge, the intuition, that there is a world which goes far beyond the physical world that we see. And that this process of moving toward awareness of the fifth dimension is what Chazal and all of Jewish thought refers to as Geulah, as redemption. Redemption is the process where Jews realize and move, sometimes kicking and screaming, but moving toward their destiny, toward their redemption from four dimensions into a fifth, and bringing the whole world along with them. And now when we go back to all the five elements in the Seder, we'll see what's really going on, because there are not four languages of redemption that stand behind the four cups of wine. If you look at the beginning of Parshat Vayera, you'll see that there are five languages of redemption. The first language of redemption is Hoseithi, I'll take you out of Egypt. Hitzalti, I'll save you from their work. Ga'alti Echem, I'm going to redeem you with an outstretched arm. Ve'lakachti Echem li'la'am, and I will take you to me as a nation. Those are the four. You know what the fifth language is? Ve'heveti Echem el ha'aretz, I will bring you into the land which I promised to your fathers, and I will give it to you as an inheritance, as a morashah, an inheritance that goes from one nation to the other. That is the fifth dimension of the Jewish people, that we are not limited by four dimensions. We live above time and above space and above circumstances. And the Jewish people, wherever we are in the world, we have a direction. That direction is not to remain in North America. It's Heveti Etchem al Haaretz. I'm going to bring you from around the world into the land of Israel, and there you will know that I am God, because only in the land of Israel can the Jewish people, as one nation living in the land of Israel, know that there is one God in its truest sense. And that's why there are five cups, and why the five cups is so important. And to leave it on the table as a cup of Eliyahu, that we'll drink it when Eliyahu comes, is making a statement that there is no role for redemption until Eliyahu comes, until Mashiach comes. That is, the cup of Eliyahu is almost, and what we call today, an anti-Zionist ceremony. The drinking of the fifth cup says that today we are living Heveti Echem el Haaretz. We're living in it right now. We're in the Acharit HaYamim, where we're seeing this come to fruition. And if you think about the five sukkim, what is the fifth passage that we read in Devarim? Vayivienu el makom hazeh, vayitein lanu et haaretz hazot, eretz zavat chalav udvash. That there the Jew who has his first fruits, he's standing in Eretz Israel, And he looks around and he sees the plenty in the land of Israel, as we are seeing now these days in the land of Israel. You go into a supermarket, the land is flowing with fruits and vegetables of all colors, shapes, and sizes. The land is green. The trees are budding. The land is coming to life again. And Am Yisrael is coming to life in the land. The Ge'ulah is happening. The fifth dimension is coming closer and closer to us. And that's why in our home, we interpret the fifth pasuk. For us, the Haggadah, the Magid, is not based on four psukim. It's based on all five. We interpret the fifth pasuk. And the fifth question, the question about Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach is the ultimate sign of our slaughtering of the gods of the pagans and our statement that there is only one God, the God of Israel, and he is the God over all mankind. And the Korban Pesach, by the way, you know, is not far away. Rav Avigdor Neventhal Shlita, the Rav of the Jewish quarter in Yerushalayim, has passed him. He's decided, halakha l'mase, that we are obligated today in Korban Pesach. The only thing stopping us from offering it is that if we try to take animals up for the Harapai, the Israeli police will stop us. But if they were let us go up, we'd be obligated to offer a Korban Pesach. And every year, and this year also, there are groups of Jews who organize themselves to bring a lamb or a small goat, up, try to bring it up onto Har Abayim to offer it as a Korban Pesach. And they're turned away at the door each year. But one of these years, they're going to be let through, and the Korban Pesach will begin again. The fifth question, why only roasted meat, is standing just around the corner waiting to enter our Seder. And the fifth children, that's probably even more than all of the others. The fifth element is so important. Because when we raise our children, especially when we raise our children as minorities, as members of a minority in a majority culture, usually a Christian culture, then our children, what do they see of Judaism? They see observances, specific observances. But their overall culture, their overall awareness, their Weltanschauung, the way that they interact with the world, is based on the majority culture in which they live, the language that they speak, the events that they see around them, the values that they see stressed by their society. And Judaism is slipping in between the cracks. Here a custom, there a ceremony. But that is not what Jewish education is supposed to be. Jewish education is supposed to be total, where a child is aware that of his Jewishness is something organic, something all-encompassing, something which is just a gestalt around him, where non-Jewish things seem odd to him, seem strange and foreign, where it's the most natural thing in the world to see a society around him where Jews give most of their time to the study of Torah, where they wear tzitzit out because why not? Where the Jewish observances and Shabbat is a national institution, and where these things are normal. This is how Judaism is supposed to be. This is the fifth child. This is the child of Jewish destiny who's waiting to enter our lives. And so when we talk about a Seder having four cups of wine, four children, four questions, four psukim, we are missing the transcendent point of the Seder altogether. There are five of everything, because the Seder is pushing us to transcend our reality. Then when we say at our Seder, L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim, my friends, I want to tell you a story. I have a good friend, a teacher in Yerushalayim, who was a shaliach, a Jewish educational shaliach in North America. For many years, he was actually on several shlichiyot. And the first time he went on to shlichut, he notified his teacher, who was Nechama Leibowitz of blessed memory, that he was going on shlichut. And she wrote him a letter, a fierce and scolding letter, where she said to him, how can you go to Chutz Laaretz? How can you go to outside the land of Israel to be involved in Jewish education when you know that the people there are going to sit down to their seders and they're going to say L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim next year in Jerusalem, and they don't even mean it. They know very well that the next year they're going to still be where they are now in Toronto or Charleston or New Jersey or wherever they're going to be, and they're going to say it again, L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim, and even then again it won't mean it. It might be a hope. It might be some kind of an outside wish, but it's not a statement of intention. And therefore, my friends, when we sit down to the Seder, we're supposed to absorb a great deal more than 4 cups of wine and 3 kazetim of matzah and a couple leaves of maror. We're supposed to absorb something much deeper, something that creeps into our neshamot, into our soul, and makes us different people. When we get up the next morning, we should look around us, wherever we are, and say, what am I doing here? Ribono shel olam, what am I doing here? I should be home. I should be with my people. I should be with my land. I should be speaking my language. I should be resuscitating my culture. I should be bringing about the fifth dimension. And therefore, my friends, even in Eretz Israel, we have this struggle. Even though we live in the land of Israel here, and we are seeing more of the fifth dimension than possibly those who are living outside, there's a great struggle here to bring the fifth dimension as well. And we need each and every Jew who will celebrate his Seder in Eretz Israel and learn Torah Eretz Israel and teach his children that they have to plant themselves in Eretz Israel and grow roots here. And it's not easy here either. It's not easy anywhere. And therefore, I want to say to you that this year, when you observe your Seder, first Seder, if you must, the second Seder, God willing, you'll be in Eretz Israel by next week and you won't have a second Seder. But if you have a second Seder, then on both Seder nights, don't read the 4 questions. Read the 5th one. Don't look for the 4 children. Look for the 5th child. Drink the 5th cup of wine. Read the 5th pasuk. And when you say, L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim, this year, make it a real intention that next year you'll be here with us and observing the Seder in its fullest and most passionate way. So I want to wish each and every one of you a Shana Tova, a new year of kings, of Jewish kings, and the 3 regalim, which remind us of Eretz Israel, and a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, to be inspiring as never before. And each and every one of you should have the merit to achieve the 5th dimension in your Seder and in your life. Thank you very much, and Chag Kasher V'Sameach.